This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Oh, he's vamping!
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you from a bunch of places on the internet. We're live now on Crowdcast and YouTube, or we're coming to you as a podcast on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts. It's all good. And we've got a packed show for you tonight.
Oh,
a huge
yeah.
one. Tons of guests going to be in here.
Stop stalling. Let's get it going already.
But first, I want to tell you a little story from my childhood. This starts at age two.
Oh, good.
I had just started to walk. And
Ira Glass over here about to drop some calm knowledge on us.
Now, once a month, we pay tribute to our Patreon supporters. $5 and up. We say a little thank you to them here on the podcast for all their support. Totally seriously, we could not keep doing this podcast
thank
or
you.
All the podcasts we do without them. So we're going to give them a shout out right now. Somebody
it's
asks every time.
It's a lot of people's favorite segment on the show. A lot of people just tune in just for this and then leave. It's all they want is just to hear us list these names.
Well, I will say, somebody always asks, comes into the middle, is like, what's going on? Well, what's going on is we're reading the names of Patreon supporters, and we're going to kick it off with Oitis Larson.
Aaron C. Hollis.
Adam DeRose.
Adam Harwitz.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
Elena Fontenot.
Amanda Harris.
Amy Gonzalez.
Andrew.
Andrew Primo.
And the third Andrew Tillman.
Beercat PhD.
Benjamin Brown.
W.
Chris Leatherman.
Christina Jarmillo.
Oops, Chris Terlizzi.
Clemens Luer.
Curtis LaRock.
Demand Ryan.
Dan Snow.
Daniel Cabrera.
Daniel Fuentes.
Danny Heck.
Debbie Gloom.
Dennis Scott.
Derek Mainhart.
Dylan L.J.
Eduardo Martinez.
Emmett Quish.
Aaron Dorian.
Jeffrey Risher.
Gerard DeVillier.
Isaac Carter.
Jake Fry.
James Connolly.
James Kurtz.
Jason Donahue.
Jeffrey Whaley.
John George.
Jonathan Jong.
Jonathan McCool.
Joshua Gibson.
Joshua W. Broxson.
Julian Lobato.
Catherine Anderson.
KC Newhaven.
Kevin Grimes.
Kevin Kleinrock.
Kieran Broderick.
Cody Thomas.
Lee Brown.
Leewana Thomas.
Luke Asink.
Mark Zeller.
Matt Tice.
Megan Thigpen.
Michael Tillman.
Mitchell McDonald.
Nathaniel Diaz.
Nelson Kelso.
Nick Grayson.
Off-White Savior.
Official CBC Chef Brett Macris.
Omnia Soul Art.
Orin Dix.
Pablo Martinez.
Pedro A. Rangel.
Pete's Pretty Kitty.
Rev Mikey. Whoa.
Robert Pettinato.
Sarah Schottmuller.
Sarah Schaefer.
Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Stanley.
Tamila Rush.
Taylor Bryan.
Terrible Jason.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Batch.
Thomas Glenn.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
Zika's Viral Comics.
Thank you all so much again for your support. If you want to support us, patreon.com/comicbookclub. We have a ton of awesome bonuses for you all, including access to our back catalog from 2011 to 2021. It's
just
a
imagine
lot of
the young voices you could hear.
Oh, hi.
Delivered. Hi, we're here to do our podcast. Have fun.
What's up? This is Kids Comic Book Club, and we're talking about Death of Superman.
That's how far
I'm
back
I'm also
it goes.
Alex. I'm Justin. Pete's we've, here, too.
We've always been old. I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, pretty much. But here's what isn't getting old, is people leaving us comments over on Apple Podcasts. If you would like to leave a comment, please do. Leave us a rating. Five stars preferred. But also, you can request a book for us to review here on the show. Let's read off this one. Great back and forth between all hosts. You can tell they have passion for this podcast, and it never gets stale. The show is not bananas good, but instead it is bananas awesome. 5 out of 5 bananas. The show is worth it for the art alone. Thanks for all the laughs, guys, and for maintaining a very positive review podcast. Would love to hear a review of the now-completed series TMNT The Last Ronin, where Eastman and Laird have finally teamed up again. I feel the series could use a more in-depth review. This one is for you, Pete.
Oh, that's, thanks. Thank you. Yes, I'm so glad we get to talk about this book.
Yes, and we are going to talk about this book on this week's Stack Podcast, which is Wednesday 9 a.m., both in the Comic Book Club feed and in its own dedicated Stack feed. So definitely check that out, as well as all of the new reviews this week. But why don't we get to our first guest here? She is coming to us all the way from London, where she is the director... Yeah, very late night. She is the director of the Foundling Museum that has an exhibit called Superheroes, Orphans, and Origins, 125 Years in Comics, that is running through August 28th. We're going to bring her into the stream here now to talk about this exhibit.
That's amazing.
And hopefully get her to sleep in a timely manner. That's the most important thing, I think.
That's what we're all about on this show, is getting people to Betty by on time.
I appreciate it, you know?
We started this podcast.
You're
gonna have
to cut you short so you can get your full eight. You need your full eight.
Exactly. We started this podcast as a way of putting people to sleep, and so far it seems to be working.
Oh, man. I love a full eight, man. I can't... You caught into that eight, and I'm going to be not good the next day, I tell you what.
I haven't had a full eight in 10 years. I don't need it. I don't want it.
Oh, you're one of those guys?
Yeah. Six is one my of those,
oh, I don't need sleep. You know what I mean?
I just, oh, no, I need
going,
it. I definitely need it. I'm losing it. I'm on the edge.
You want it. You just can't get it is what you're saying.
100%.
I'm sorry to hear that, man.
Wow. Keep talking, guys. I'm going to try to remove her and bring her back in again.
I think if we're just silent, it'll help the process. Both the podcast and the technological.
I've got you, Justin.
Oh, never mind. We'll have to pick that up later because I believe Carol is here on the stream. Hello. How are you?
I'm good. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. There we go. Thank you so much for joining us. Again, you are coming out to us from England I don't know that you're in the Foundling Museum right now, but you're coming to us generally from the Foundling Museum. For those... Yes.
Nice.
For those who don't necessarily know, and I think that's most of us on this side of the pond, what is the Foundling Museum? How did it start?
Well, foundling was an 18th century word for a baby who had been abandoned. And we tell the story of the Foundling Hospital, which was the UK's first children's charity, but also its first public art gallery. And it was set up in 1739 to take in babies who would have otherwise been abandoned. And the core of our collection as an art museum is this amazing art, because all of the leading artists of the day, and not just the painters and sculptors, but composers and craftspeople, they donated their work to the charity to raise its profile. And so we have work by William Hogarth and Reynolds and Gainsborough and Ramsay and Handel and Dickens. And we continue today to work with amazing contemporary artists who help deliver the work that we do with particularly young people who are in the state care system and young people who are just leaving care. And working with artists help them kind of get increase their self-esteem and get a vision of what life could be and have confidence in themselves and future they could build for themselves.
I love that concept in general, but I love how well that ties with superheroes and with this exhibit. It's such a smart thing to put together to bring those connections that you're talking about and bring that inspiration, because of course that's what superheroes are all about. How did this exhibit first come about? Was there like a lightning bolt moment where somebody said, wait a second, most of them are in fact orphans. We could do this.
Well, it's a two-part origin. We have wonderful fellows, esteemed artists who work with us. And one of our fellows is an amazing poet called Lem Sisse, who was himself brought up in care. And he created for us this text mural called Superman Was a Foundling. And it's just over 100 names of characters from fiction around the world who were orphaned, adopted, fostered, or found. And it was installed in 2014, and visitors love it. And it Anyway, and so that was the original start point. But the idea for this show, I'm afraid the credit has to go to my husband.
Nice.
having had over a decade of marriage moaning about the boxes of comics that skulk under beds.
Yes. And under
he said, do you know what, you could, there would be a really interesting exhibition here if you just looked at the characters from comics and graphic novels. And it was obviously, as I said, our collection is historic and contemporary art. So there was nobody in our team who knew anything about comics. And so we worked with a fabulous freelance curator called Laura Chase. And she just took that idea. And all through lockdown, we were working on the show just before we went into the first lockdown in 2020. And we've ended up with a show that, as I said, it's over 125 years, 9 different countries, 3 continents, the most incredible range of work. And I have to say, having not been a particular comic fan when I started, I'm convinced it's, I actually think that the comics as a medium are absolutely perfect for really revealing some of the issues, the resilience, the trauma, the anxieties, the amazing courage and empathy that people who've grown up without birth parents, particularly in kind of state care systems, how they navigate the world. And it's had a real impact on our visitors. And I think, you know, the thing that's most frequently said is, it had never occurred to me, but of course, yes, they're you know, hiding in plain sight.
With your outside eye on the comic book world, what pieces of the exhibit really stood out to you, or what sort of drew you in the most?
I think there are a number of things. I mean, I think in the world of adoption, you know, the absolute cardinal rule is you do not change the name that the birth parents gave the child. You know, if you adopt a child, it doesn't matter if you all sorts of things will change in that child's life, but it's the name it was given by its birth parents. You don't touch that. And of course, it had never occurred to me that Superman himself, he has 3 names. And yeah. So many of the villains try and get to Superman by undermining his sense of himself. And it's, who is he? Is he Kal-El? The parents that he never knew, the family home that he has no relationship to. Is he Clark Kent, which is the name given to him by his adoptive family, or everybody else who just calls him Superman? And this sense of how often it comes through of his own sense of, who am I? You know, where am I? Where do I come from? What is my story? Which is very resonant for the work that we do with a lot of care leaders. But I was also, there's a section of the exhibition which is comics that are the artists are drawing on their own lived experience of growing up in care. Mm. And that's immensely powerful as well. And you realize how comics and graphic novels are also very powerful, almost like journals, I think, for these artists. And so they go from Carlos Jimenez in the 1970s and his Paracuellos and lifting the lid on the social aid homes under Franco that he grew up in as a child. We've got, who else is in there? We've got Lisa Ulam Herblum, who did her palimpsest. She was born in Korea, spent the first few years of her life in a Korean orphanage, and then was adopted by a New Zealand family. And she looks at the issue of interracial adoption and the kind of inequalities within that and the lack of voice. But then there's also Taya Matsumoto's Sonny, and he grew up in a children's aid home. And as an art historian, we have the original artwork of Sonny, and it's beautiful. Oh, cool. They are so beautiful. They're such beautiful paintings and just, yeah, delightful. So I think, there's so much in the show. I mean, you know, for people who are classic comics, Stan Lee, there's, you know, all the comics from the 40s and 50s and 60s. But some of the more contemporary work, we've commissioned some work as well for the show, is a real revolution. So I think I'd say there's genuinely something there for everyone, including people who might not necessarily think of comics as their thing.
Well, that's what's very striking to me is not only is it for everyone, but it's also you know, you can go as a family and, you know, kids will get something out of this as well as adults. I mean, as someone who's read comics my whole life, I'm very excited about hopefully seeing this someday, because it's kind of a new perspective on something that's been right in front of me the whole time. And I think that's one of the nice, powerful things about art. Can you talk a little bit about the fact that this is going to be such a kind of big catcher for a lot of different people?
I think it is. I mean, I think it's, you know, if you are a comic fan, there's a lot in the show that you'll love, from, you know, the sort of historics and the classic works. We're showing work that's not been shown before. We've got wonderful original work by Robin Smith, who's the artist for Nubia Real One. And that's fantastic. And the catalogue for the exhibition, there's a great interview with Robin there. That's wonderful work. Sanmao, the Japanese comic by Zhang Leping, from the 40s. And Sanmao means three hairs. And this thing about him growing up on the street and being so malnourished, he only has three hairs. Wow. So I mean, the one I think is, for me, the extraordinary one is Keiji Nakazawa's Barefoot Gen. And I don't know if you know, but he lost his family in Hiroshima. And this is a manga comic based on his own experience. And it's sort of...
Wow.
It's extraordinary. So you're going from, you know, KG's Barefoot Gen through to, you know, X-Men and Black Panther. And it's an amazing combination of work. But it the thing that unites it all is this idea of these characters and how that loss of birth parents, how that has shaped their relationship to the world and how they navigate it. And so we have a section about Behind the Mask, looking at particularly Spider-Man, Batman and Black Panther, and how the mask is something that is both protects them in terms of their identity, but also their emotions, and how losing parents in a kind of violent situation, how that trauma kind of carries through in your life, the inability to make lasting emotional relationships often. There's a section looking at characters like Annie and Street Angel and those children who are homeless, and how as young kids they have to live on their wits and somehow manage a world that really doesn't give a shit about them, and how often these characters are nevertheless trying to fight to keep society together, you know, that they're there as characters that are always trying to help, trying to make amends, trying to fix things for people, trying to, make society better when society actually doesn't really care about them at all. And so, yes, as you can see, I can talk about it a long time.
This is a very, not necessarily specific to this exhibit, but just a general being a director of a museum question. But how do you acquire pieces like this? Is it, I assume it's kind of different for each one, but let's say you're trying to get a page from Superman or a page from Black Panther for this exhibit. What's the actual process like?
Well, we borrow in this instance. So we've borrowed a lot of work from the Billy Island collection in Ohio, and they have an amazing collection, historic collection of comics. So some of the earliest comics in the show we've got are Hogan's Alley, which is from the 1890s, and The Yellow Kid. The Victoria and Albert Museum in London, the British Library, we've borrowed from private collectors. And then to your point, you know, we have to make the decision about which is the page that we want to show. Is it the cover, or in certain cases, it's actually specific pages that are revealing particular issues we're very interested in relation to this theme. But I have rather brilliantly one private collector. I discovered completely by accident that he was a collector of comics. And as I've been talking about this exhibition over the past couple of years, as it's been developing, a number of people have revealed that they are a secret thing.
It's so fun.
Exactly.
Their secret origin. Yeah.
They're secret comic collectors. So I was talking to this this woman who is a supporter of the museum, and I was telling her what we're doing, and she said, "My husband collects comics." I was like, "Oh, does he?" So we ended up having a conversation, and he revealed to me that the only character that he didn't have in his collection was Superboy, and that he had been basically, there was a moratorium on him collecting any more comics, and he wasn't allowed any more comics. But because we didn't have Superboy in the show, and so we came up with this win-win that he acquired Superboy to lend it to our exhibition.
Wow, what a workaround.
Yeah. So he's going, brilliant, everybody wants.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, we have private lenders as well who've, and then at the end of the show, the works will all go back. And because they're obviously work on paper, they're quite light sensitive, so they can't be on show.
Oh, yeah.
For that long, which is why we're so pleased the catalogue is so fantastic, because it means that, you know, once these works have all gone back to their respective homes and to dark storerooms, and that the exhibition itself will live.
And this is running until August 28th, is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
All right, cool. The cost is the ticket to the museum and also flying to London, I assume. That's probably
The flying to London bit.
Yeah, it might be a little more expensive.
But... So you have a lot of time to read comics, a lot of time to get familiar with the work.
It's very true. This is very true. And I think, but it is, you know, it's definitely, if people are planning on coming over to London, we are very close. We're just around the corner from the British Museum. So very, very close.
Awesome.
It's definitely worth seeing.
And there's probably not a ton of comics in the British Museum, so I feel like you have...
Yeah, that's going to be the real stop,
yeah. Usually I go to the British Museum first for my comics, don't find anything there, and I don't know where to go next, so this is perfect. Carol, thank you so much for coming on. Absolute pleasure. Good luck with the exhibition, and fingers crossed we can make it your way to check it out.
Cool. Thank you, really guys. Exciting. Love you, speaking.
All right, there we go. Once again, that is called the Foundling Museum. It is in London. The exhibit is Superheroes, Orphans, and Origins, 125 Amazing. Years in comics, running through August 28th. But as mentioned, you got to make it to London first. So there you go. Why don't we bring
just
in...
make a weekend of it. Hop over.
Kind of actually want to go. It sounds
awesome. My god, do I want to go? It sounds amazing.
Let's do it, you guys. Three of us. We're gonna
It'd be
go.
Great if we finally got to see each other all three together, and it was in London.
All right, why don't we bring in our second guest here? It's a pleasure to have him back. He is the creator of Jacob's Apartment, which is out now from Graphic Monday. Joshua Campbell, everybody. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you?
I want to go to the Foundling Museum.
Right? Okay, right? The four of us.
Yeah. You guys got to get me in there too. So.
Absolutely.
Right. We get enough people, we get a private jet. It's cost effective. It's cost effective.
Who do you know with a private jet?
No, we rent it. It's like calling an Uber.
It's like cool, like an Uber. Let's talk about Jacob's Apartment. This book is great. It's very evocative, very sad, to be honest, while I was reading it. Basically, I guess, I don't know. I actually want you to describe the concept, because there's a lot of stuff going on in this book. And initially, when I was reading through it, I was like, okay, it's about these two people living in an apartment together, and they're exploring their dreams in real life while their own dreams are affecting their reality and back and forth. But it sort of grows from there throughout the book.
I love that. Yeah, I love that as a start. That's the main theme, is like there's two roommates. They're sort of polar opposites. They're young adults, kind of living in this old Victorian apartment in Long Beach. And they are both kind of pursuing their dreams and kind of finding connection with each other because of their common pursuit of their dreams. But both of them kind of face different sort of young adult curveballs that tend to happen at an early age, where Jacob, the main character, his father is diagnosed with cancer and then ends up dying of cancer. And it sort of causes him to spiral and question his belief system. It's like definitely exploring a lot of themes of the kinds of questions that can challenge even the strongest of faith. And then on top of that, Sarah, his roommate, is kind of reeling from a broken relationship with an ex-boyfriend who had moved to like New York. And so I'm glad you caught, like, because it's still a relatively new release, so it's exciting to see that you caught the whole interplay of like dreams and reality sort of interweaving. Because there is a lot of that, where their physical dreams and then their real pursuit of dreams start kind of interweaving and overlapping throughout. But there's a broader theme of just kind of like the ghosts of our childhood that kind of pursue us into adulthood, especially young adulthood, and kind of haunt you a little bit. So there's definitely like that as a theme. And then definitely sort of an overall question, like a hypothetical that I was sort of playing with the book, of just the question of like, what is the pursuit of like passion and dreams without love? And so it's kind of a heavy book, but like, I mean, you guys have had me on here before for an equally heavy book. So you'll probably know, like, for some reason, I'm drawn to talking about the things that, and I think I feel like it's kind of what I'm meant to do, is like talk about topics that you really aren't supposed to like publicly talk about, and kind of lean into the discomfort and kind of make a comic about it. Because like your guest previously mentioned, I think one of the things that's unique to comics is that comics are such an intimate experience when you're reading them, that it's kind of like reading a diary. And there's this very like, it's right. an active reading experience. And so I feel like it's a perfect medium for kind of handling difficult topics, I think.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about that this week, actually, because like with TV, film, like we don't set the pace of it. So you can't really let your mind wander too much if you're fully engaged with it. With a comic, you can hit something, you can read a page and be struck by it and really have time to think about it and then pick right back up in the story. And I feel like your work is sort of about that. The last book we talked about, I think, was much more about that. This feels like it gets to wander a little bit into dreaming.
This is a lighter book of the two. I feel like with this, it also is just kind of like tackling a lot of struggles that like people commonly have, like in their early 20s. I definitely had. It's got some semi-autobiographical elements to it as well. And I do think exploring loss and sort of how that affects your identity is like fun and cool. And I think comics, I'm glad the Foundling Museum is catching on to the fact that comics are art. Comics can be like kind of pursuing these literary kind of topics, and I think there's a market for it, you know? So, yeah.
I just wanted to say, I really loved how the art really helps with the ideas and the different concepts being explored, like the whole Nimrod thing. I thought that was really hilarious, and kind of like the way you're kind of going from kind of like tripped out spacey to like old school comic style to kind of explain things was really magical and wove really well together with this story, where you're not like, oh, I don't understand what's going on. You're kind of like, oh, this is cool.
Thanks, Pete. Yeah, like I love playing with style and sort of exploring with the shifting styles within books. I've always been baffled by, like, I know so many artists who do comics and they stick to like one specific style. And I feel like it's such a bummer, because it's like we have so much variety in our palettes of what we can use. And so I love that idea. If I'm like explaining, like there's a part in this book that gets heavy into theology. And some of the like more problematic, like theological questions, particularly in Christianity, that people might have. Yeah. And to kind of explain it, like you said, I break it down into like an old school, like very bad, like the worst copy of Thor that you could find that's not by the main artist, right? Yeah. And maybe it's not even Thor. Maybe it's the ad for like Underoos, you know?
Yeah. It's like the ad in the back.
Yeah, but I like playing with that and like the explanatory nature of comics, where you can kind of break things down in a more kind of lighthearted way. So even though it deals with heavy topics, it definitely has like a lighthearted nature to it as well. And a lot of interplay between like fantasy and reality to kind of hopefully, you know, make a meaningful point.
A comparison for people out there listening, and please tell me if you think this is apt or out of nowhere, but Waking Life, a Linklater film, I felt like the art style feels like a little bit into that world, and a lot of the sort of darker tones you were dealing
with. Yeah, 100%. I mean, it pulls a lot from The Graduate too. And there's like, if you guys look really carefully, there's like throughout the main apartment in there, there's like literally a Graduate poster like in the background, and some other little elements of like hints and stuff. But I always like on my pitch, I'll usually say that it's like if you mixed like Ghost World with like Eternal Sunshine for the Spotless Mind and kind of scrambled it together.
Sold. But, I love that idea. Run with it.
But anyhow, so that's pretty much like One of the things also with paneling that I like to do is like a lot of like interplay where you're kind of asking the reader to be active in the process. So there's things like at the beginning, it kind of shifts between two different timelines, and you get this little indicator, but it kind of forces you to do a once over again. But like once you do that first page, you're kind of prepped for like the work that comes ahead. And I don't like to make comics that are like impossible to digest or read, but I do like playing with like paneling and how far we can push the medium, you know.
Awesome. You mentioned before that there are semi-autobiographical elements in this. And definitely while I was reading this, I was like, okay, these are things that you talked about in two stories, so I can see how they're there. But at the same time, it is fictional. So why take sort of like that half step? Why keep things to your life but still make it fictional versus fully fictional, say?
Don't accuse our guest of half stepping. That's not
no, no. To be clear, why did you do this wrong? I guess
that's what it is. I was going to say, like, I was going to quote Tribe Called Quest and be like, hey, I never half step because I'm not a half stepper. So,
well done, sir.
But with Jacob's Apartment, it's like, it's a comic that's aiming for more of like a 16 or older age range. Mm-hmm. And there were some themes and some interplay of dreams that I wanted to do, kind of influenced by like Winsor McKay, where I wanted to be able to be a little more playful and a little more lighthearted, and also talk about a much more distant time than like two stories. Whereas two stories, you know, I'm still, I have volume two of that I'm still kind of working on and will happen. And that's more of just like, you know, if you're a fan of like doomed romance comics, which is actually a whole genre, this comic would be for you. I think if you're more a fan of like the very like traditional, like indie underground, just raw confessional autobio stuff, two stories is still kind of like probably the best thing for you that I've made, where I get like heavily into it. But I like kind of interplaying with both. Right now I'm working on like a historical fiction graphic novel about the Brownings, for West Margin Publishing. And like, I like the idea of, as a writer and as an artist, like kind of playing with multiple genres. And, for some reason, the main interests are all literary kind of pursuits. But that's kind of the one thing that kind of ties all of my interests together. But that's a really long non-answer, so I guess I am kind of.
Yeah. No. I mean, to be clear.
Gotcha question.
Ha ha. No, I just think it's interesting because there's definitely like, as you're writing, you're not writing something that's an autobiography, but clearly it is you at points in there. But I guess that's a thing with writing, right? Like, of course you're going to call out your own experiences to put it in there. So.
Yeah, and I think there's like some themes in it, like grief, like I said, you know, where it's like inevitably, like you're going to kind of need to draw on those like more emotional things to kind of tell a story. And also, I think that again, like my interest in comics is to kind of lean into the discomfort and kind of make that a theme and a topic. So yeah, 100%.
It also struck me while I was reading this, and I mean this again, I feel like I'm being very antagonistic, but I'm really not, like in a very good way. That,
bring it out.
How dare you, first of all. this is the sort of comic that I feel like is not made a whole lot anymore. Like, I feel like comics have...
What the fuck, man?
Hold on! It was very refreshing to read this because I feel like these sort of like very personal, smaller stories that really this is just about... two people adding a third person that I'm not necessarily going to spoil here, but
Jesus Christ, it's
very focused in this way, which I really appreciate. And Pete, lay off of me. I'm giving a compliment here.
Could you boil his comic down to like something shitty and then be like, why would you do that? So simple.
I was saying I love that. I loved reading that again, like something that is very small. So I think it was really nice to read this very focused. Pete's fucking me up now, is what.
Let let him talk for a second.
Pizza my head. Pizza my head, man.
I can say a bad sign. You're basically trying to say I'm very small. No, I'm just kidding. So I get what you're saying. Like, it is intentionally kind of a quiet story. And one of the things that I like about, like, the, you see this a lot in independent film, and then there are other cartoonists who've delved into that realm. Like, one of my favorite cartoonists is Derek Kirkkim. And he'll have like a whole story about like people in like a grocery store, like shopping. And I just think there is something really neat about those like quiet snapshots of life that like try to, you know, you're not literally snapshotting life. Like you're trying to highlight some deeper truths about everyday experience. But at the same time, like it's okay to be kind of quiet and intimate. And I totally get why you get that feeling, because like there's even sequences in this where like the characters are like sitting at a bar and you're kind of as the reader like getting a little tipsy along with them because like the panels start getting blurry. Like but it's like a moment where it kind of sits with the conversation and like there's patience and kind of quietness to it. So I don't know. I almost think of it as like, I mean, this is going to sound pretentious, but it's kind of like a poem or something more than like a novel, you know?
Yeah.
What I like about the sort of the intimate and the quiet every day of it is that's when we dream in reality. And that's where like dreams can sort of, they infect our reality. It's not like we're out in the middle of a superhero fight and we're like, you know, I just had a dream or whatever. Like that's what the beauty of it, I think.
Yeah, totally.
What else are you working on at this point? You got the Browning thing that you mentioned. You're still working on Two Stories Part Two. That's already a lot, but
yeah. So those are kind of what are on my plate so far. The funny thing is, so the Browning's book is definitely going to be like the next book out. That was sort of a pandemic just thing that happened where I had this brief window of time where I was waiting for editorial feedback on Two Stories Book Two. And then Jacob's Apartments, Galleys were out. And I was like, I called my sister up because she had this brilliant script she had written. She's a editor. It was about the Brownings. And I just sent it to my literary agent with five pages that I just did and was like, hey, this would be really cool to put out. And then it got picked up by Wes Margin, who actually published work by the Brownings. So it's kind of like a perfect...
Oh, that's awesome.
Scenario, but it's funny right now that's pretty time consuming because it's like when you like I've worked on obviously auto bio stuff and slice of life stuff, but it's mostly contemporary, so it's interesting when you're working from a script where it's like somebody just like, you know, picks up a glass to have a drink or something and you're like, wait, what did a glass look like in 1840? Like everything, every single movement in it is like requiring much research, but it's also super fun and it makes me really admire the hell out of you know, books like From Hell and like like historical fiction that's been done in comics like Jason Lutz Berlin, where it's like the amount of intensity of like just like haircuts, like clothing, every movement, like it all has to be well researched. And it's a lot of fun. So right now that's pretty much my time consuming thing. But I have this side thing, and I don't want to kill too much of your time, but it came up while I think I might work on something comical after, because I've been working on comping this out. And the first page had like a scene where it kind of zooms in on a river in London, and to show like a boat, and it says like, you know, the location and then the date like 1840. And I had this visual pop in my head of like a guy on a jet ski. Like first it's a shot of historical Victorian London, and then you have a guy like under the London Bridge like in the distance on a jet ski with a monocle, and it kind of zooms in on him and says Victorian England. And then the way you would market it is like sell it as if it was a historical fiction that was well researched. So that might actually
that's really funny
that I've told friends, but it's like I might actually just do like a weird Miami Vice, like might take a Miami Vice script and just put it in Victorian England.
Wow. That might be
I love a straight face like, no, this is Victorian England.
Exactly.
I promise you, I researched this.
Those are Victorian sharks, okay? They have top hats. Like, what? Yeah.
And they all rock Stargate jackets.
That idea is
jet
amazing.
Ski time traveler, I'm here for it. That's
it has to happen.
Well, this book is great. I loved reading it, despite what Pete was making you think that I was thinking. It's really good.
Yeah,
I should pick it up.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah,
really, yes. So good having you on again. Appreciate talking about it, and we'll have you on for the next one.
Awesome. I love the show. Yeah, and I appreciate everybody who pre-orders or orders it. I've been on the pre-order rant lately, but order it. Go get it. It's available at every bookstore.
Commit
awesome.
To it.
Josh, nice. Have a great night.
Pre-commit.
Awesome. Take care.
All right. Once again, that is Joshua Campbell. The book is called Jacob's Apartment, and it's out now from Graphic Monday, and it is real, real good.
Real good. Yep. It's very funny to me that, Alex, you were like, before Pete got in your head, you were like, you know, it's just so slice of life. This is a show where we mostly talk about, like, Superman fighting Mongol. And you're like, you know, this slice of life stuff, why don't you jazz it up a little bit?
No, that's not what I was saying at all. What I was saying was it was a refreshing change of pace because we haven't seen, I haven't read slice of life stuff in a good long time. So it was nice to see it again. You leave me alone, both of you.
I'm going
to
send you a slice of life, of my life. I'm going to send you a slice of my life.
Okay, that sounds good. Why don't we bring in our last guests here?
Yeah, let's insult the last guest, right, Sal? Let's do it.
Oh, my God. Leave me alone, Pete. They are putting out a new anthology called Scott Snyder Presents Tales from the Cloakroom. It's on Kickstarter now, right? Ladies and gentlemen, C.K. Lawson and Aubrey Lynn Jepson. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Thank you so much for being here. This project is awesome, and it's killing it on Kickstarter right now. I think you have I'm looking at the page. The dog is howling in excitement.
Yeah, exactly.
You have a 7,500 goal. You've blasted past it. You're almost at $12,000, so that's awesome. But the idea of this project is you were all in Scott Snyder's class, and now you're putting out an anthology that came out of that class. That's so cool. Cool. Yeah. The end.
Yeah. So, you know, when Substack brought in all of the comic book creators and stuff, what drew a lot of us to Scott's is that it was offering a monthly class on writing comics. And so I guess starting in the fall of last year, Joe G. Schuster, who created the little nugget of the idea first, just there's a Discord server for the class, and there's about 1,000 people in there, and they put out that they were trying to see if people were interested in putting an anthology together, and then Joe didn't feel like he had all of the skills required to pull it off, so he started bringing in other people as part of an editorial team, reached out to Ben O'Grady, and then they just started posting in the Discord server, hey, if you're interested, let us know, and they set up a side Discord server for all of us, and then brought on Aubrey, who has the most editorial experience out of all of us, probably all of us combined. And then I was the latecomer to the group because I started as a writer. I have a story in the collection and then came on board because I wanted to learn as much as I could from Aubrey.
Awesome. Well, Aubrey, talk about putting this together then. What was involved? Was it, I mean, I know from reading the Kickstarter and also from reading the book, but for those who are listening right now, what's the unifying theme of the book?
If people theme of the book is the jacket. So Scott Snyder has a press of his own called Best Jacket Press, and we wanted to pay like homage to him and like honor the fact that he's taught us all and we all came together because of his class. And so it was really an open call. Like if you just wanted to jump in, this was really before I jumped in on the project, but Joe and Ben were like, hey, if you want to do this, find your team and do this. And so it was a really good opportunity because like it, you know, submitting to anthologies and such is hard. And so it was really a really open opportunity that if you'll do the work, we'll get you published. And so, yeah, so we did that. And we've worked with them along the road too, like from script to art directing to everything. So they had, they weren't alone, like just making this piece of art. Like we were there helping everybody, all the writers work on their scripts. And then when they got art back saying, okay, this is outside of the area. Like there's an area when you print a book that things cannot be outside of. And a lot of people, especially writers, don't know that because a lot of writers don't have that kind of education. And so like a lot of things we had to go back and be like, okay, this bubble's outside or this is outside of there. And this isn't making sense. We need to reposition those bubbles, like all of those fine details that you have to do. So
What I love about this project is, and this is coming from like a theater, improv, sketch, whatever background, this feels like the ultimate class show in a certain way, where like you go from doing the class to actually seeing how it is in practice. So for, I mean, I guess Aubrey, this might be different for you, but for CK, for you from the class to this experience, putting this together, what was that like? What did you learn? What were the tweaks? What were the changes? What were the big lessons you took away?
From creating the anthology or from Scott's class?
From going from Scott's class to creating this anthology.
Sure. And also to build off of what Aubrey said real quickly is, we really wanted to honor the spirit of the fact that this is supposed to be educational, the class and everything. So we really tried to get everyone into the collection that wanted in, whether it required 2 hours of our time editorially or 20 hours of our time editorially. Wow. We've gotten a little burnt out several times along the way, trying our best to help everybody get
sounds
there. We've provided a ton of resources to be like, hey, if you're here's a great Reddit place to go and find artists if you're struggling, or we can recommend some great artists for you. So while they've been responsible for putting their team together, we have tried to guide them along the way as much as we could, because we all want to learn from the experience. So for me, you know, I've been a writer for quite a while, but this is now the first time I've decided to take writing really seriously. And for me, the biggest thing coming out of it, I mean, I learned at every stage. I learned, I mean, let's face it, when I first joined, I'm pretty sure I said to the group, what's a pitch? And I just didn't even know that much. Like I had written plenty of stories, but I was like, wait, what's a log line? What's a pitch? And so we've really helped each other with resources as far as, you know, a lot of us have pitched to places where I've been lucky enough to get into some other collections since the class started. But a lot of them kept getting turned away from other anthologies. So we decided to start having like pitch post-mortems, where we would take everybody's pitches and analyze them together and meet.
That's super helpful.
Yeah. And so we really are trying to honor the spirit of that we're all here to learn. We're all here to build a community. And so we've been doing things like that. For me, though, right from the get-go, I came in with a pretty good editorial eye, I think, just from what I do for a living as my day job. And thankfully, Aubrey has agreed with that there, because I had a lot of imposter syndrome at first. I learned as far as the script review process goes, I learned that not everybody is great at accepting feedback. Sometimes you'll get people who say, well, I've been published. Who are you to tell me, whatever. And then we've, of course, had really, really great collaborators for the most part. But you do have to learn to deal with those types of people. And I'm a pretty blunt person, so I had to like maybe learn to be a little bit more diplomatic with how I speak to people.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you've been doing a podcast with somebody for like 15 years and they start criticizing you in the middle of the podcast.
Don't make this about you.
It's a really big issue, Pete.
He's sharing with his wife with us. Don't make this about
Alex leaning into the microphone.
Sorry, guys. I'm sorry.
Well, I will say 25% of our collection is Slice of Life, so have fun with that.
Way to reignite the debate, CK. I do have a question for you about the Scott Center class. I feel like, could you tell us sort of how it works? I feel like that's something that sounds very cool, but from the outside, I don't quite understand.
But is it? Let's find out.
Well, no, not even is it. Is it Discord based? Like, how does the actual process work?
You'll make me go. So. Okay, sorry. So Scott has like a monthly. I think it's on Zoom. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm trying to remember which platform we use. We use Zoom, and he has like a monthly Zoom where he goes over a concept. And he kind of started with more basic stuff like story structure, and then went into character, and then he's gone through things like collaboration, because like a lot of the people in the class are brand new. Not every writer in our anthology is brand new to comics. Like several of them have been published before, things like that. But he really did make it so that if you had never written a comic script before, or you had only just started reading comics, that you could still grasp how the medium is different from other mediums. And then there is a Discord. So people use that to kind of discuss classes. If you I believe it's the people who have paid for like the full year. They got I can't say that word. They got a special status where they could ask questions and we get like a quarterly Q&A. So we get even a little bit more content and a little bit more of like getting our questions answered than other people might that are maybe month to month. But like, I would say it's really useful. Like I've been trying to do comics for about 10 years and I felt like the class was really good. I felt like Scott has some insights that like, I mean, I've taken classes from tons of different people in comics at this point. And everyone has insights I wouldn't have thought of and they're all different. And so I just think it's really valuable educational content if you want to get into comics.
And so
not to turn into a Scott Snyder love fest, but I do feel like just talking to him about comics, he's someone who doesn't just talk about his personal process like a lot of people. He talks about the process, and then he's like, he tries to engage so hard with you. Do you understand the process? How would your process be if you were to even do this? And we're just interviewing him for like our show or for a website or something, and he was still doing that. So I can't imagine when he's like
definitely
fully in that work. That's so cool.
Yeah, his energy is definitely infectious. But yeah, it's $7 a month. You have access to all of the archives of the classes. So if you were to join now for $7 a month, you have an access to a year's worth of classes. The last class of this class, that was a lot of classes, ends July 13th. I think is the last date. But to go back to your previous question real quickly, we've learned along the way just how to handle not only editorial scripts, but also, like Aubrey was talking about, I've learned about how to handle trim work and copy safe and all that from the visual side. Learned how to budget, which when doing a Kickstarter is something I didn't realize how much time that would take, and running all of these different budget scenarios. Learned how to build a Kickstarter campaign. So basically for me, every step along the way has been a learning process. So.
Class sounds amazing.
How involved or not was Scott in this actual project? Was it more his blessing or was he ushering it along? Or
did he pitch ideas and you guys like, no, Scott, now we're
off. Okay. Oh my
Why
God.
Why don't you let us do a little storytelling?
Yeah, right. No, it was definitely more of a, we had his blessing very early on to do the anthology, and he had said he would lend his name to it.
Oh, wow.
And to me, that just blows me out of the water because, like, there are very few people I'd let use my name on things without, like, knowing them well, you know? Mm-hmm. But he was very benevolent in that he was like, yeah, you guys can use my name. And then he, for the Kickstarter, he's promoted us, and then he also offered to sign books. So we added a tier with books. And that's been a really well-selling tier. So he's been incredibly supportive. He hasn't been involved at all in the editorial. He really just trusted us, apparently, because on the editorial end, like, we've done our thing. He's just been, and then his editorial assistant, Tyler Jenis, has also been incredibly helpful. He's usually been our contact to communicate back and forth with Scott. And so, they've just been so supportive and we're so grateful. Like, it's amazing.
Well, I just want to say, because we haven't actually talked about the content of the book really at all without spoiling any of the stories, it's such a cool collection that all of you have put together. The art is so gorgeous and so varied across the board. It's awesome. The stories are in the best way all over the place, from, let's say, slice of life, like you're saying, to absolutely fantastic story.
Not something so small, you know what I mean? Like, there are bigger things happening in it, too.
Pete. Come on, Pete.
Don't get all close to the
camera. Pete, slices can be big. If you get the right pizza spot.
Exactly. I'm talking like I slice when I get a pizza, I just slice it straight in half, and that's two slices right there. That's how I always do it. I don't know how you do it. Anyway, there's a great variance in terms of the content of the stories as well as the art of the stories, and it's really awesome. So congratulations on all of that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed reading it. It was really impressive. Congratulations.
Will there be more of these?
There is talk of that. But real quickly, so a quarter of our collection is slice of life, a quarter is horror, a quarter is sci-fi, and then a quarter is everything else. And so we, and luckily our creators, we were very cognizant of trying to support underrepresented communities. So over 50% of our creators are women, 2SLGBTQIA+, BIPOC, like myself, a person with a disability, et cetera. And we also tried to, for those out there wondering, we got a lot of questions about how does how did you make a multi-genre one work? Is we just worked on that ebb and flow where, you know, if this one's a high-packed action, then the next one's going to be a slow slice of life, and then kind of create an ebb and flow.
Oh, smart.
Like that.
Nice.
So so that's kind of how we tackled it for anybody listening that's like, well, I'm, you know, you're used to buying a collection, it being all horror, or, you know, you know, some people don't like slice of life. So, you know, you got to deal with that. But
not
but,
me. I love it. I love it.
We did. Okay. Jesus.
I lost my train of thought. But...
there's talks of someone else in the class who's trying to get next anthology together. There's been some discussions of some of the editorial team, probably not us. If I'm sorry to speak for UCK, but others like remaining and trying to do a second version, like Tales from the Cloakroom 2. So I'd keep your eyes out. There may be more.
Nice.
Awesome. Great. Well, this is great. Good luck. It doesn't seem like you need it necessarily because you're already killing it on the Kickstarter, but I hope you get even more and more because it's such a cool project. Congratulations. And thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye. Thank you. Later.
That is cool, man. I tell you, it's an impressive collection. For sure.
Super impressive. Again, that was C.K. Lawson and Aubrey Lynn Jepson. The project is called Scott Snyder Presents Tales from the Cloakroom. It's on Kickstarter now as of this recording. You got another 11 days, so you can jump on that right now and get it.
Hey, Brent, have you ever seen Babylon 5 before?
Babylon 5? You mean that show from the 90s?
Yep.
No.
You want to watch it for the first time?
Let's do it.
Babylon 5 for the first time. Not a Star Trek podcast.
We are two veteran Star Trek podcasters watching Babylon 5 for the first time. We're searching for Star Trek-like messages in the series and deciding if we should have watched it sooner.
You can find us on Good Pods, YouTube, and anywhere you get your podcasts.
Babylon 5 for the first time, not a Star Trek podcast.
Attention podcast listeners and YouTube watchers. I'm Logan, the host of Mostly Superheroes, a weekly pursuit for the world's best stories with an emphasis on live-action superhero stuff. Every week, join me, PC Mike, The Giggler, Scotty Scoop, and Carrie as we talk MCU, DCU, books, TV, movies, and more. MostlySuperheroes.com is where you want to be. Watch us on YouTube, listen where you get your podcast, and we'll see you Monday, Sunday on Patreon. Enjoy the rest of the show.
And folks,
what
we're
a great
move
slice
with our...
of podcast that was.
Oh, we're going to move with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions.
Yep.
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop Ask a Question in Ask a Question on Crowdcast, or you can drop a question in the comments over on YouTube. But first, as usual, we have been having our CBC chef, Brent Macris. Well, usually he is curating stuff. This week, his challenge was to choose a beer you like and then drink that beer as the drink for the show. So let's talk about what we're drinking. Pete. Oh, Justin, do you want to go first? Because I don't think you have a beer.
No, ironically, I'm rarely drinking a cocktail tonight. Some sort of thumb in the eye for our CBC.
Yeah, God, man. If we could stop attacking the people that come on our show, that'd be great.
Never. I'm drinking a gin that I found. Someone brought around to where I am in upstate
New
York.
You just found it?
Yeah, I found
it. Just walking down the street, and then you were like, "Hey, there's a bottle. It's probably booze."
It's a gunpowder gin, and it is really good.
Nice.
I'm a little worried about you.
Pete, what about you? You got harangued at the beer store again, is what I'm getting.
No, this is still from the last excursion.
So what are you drinking? A bash? A monster bash?
You're ashamed to show us on the camera what you're even holding. You're like shy.
I don't know what it is. It says peach rhubarb mash.
Pete, what is happening? I can't imagine you being like, I'd like to pay for this, let alone put it in your car.
Well,
the
problem is, as I told you, I walked in there and like all of a sudden I'm too old for beer. Like all these labels. I'm like, what does this mean? Why is everything so
you,
sour?
A recluse? Like the bright lights of the big city beer store scared you? Also, if you see something named Peach Rhubarb Smash or whatever you just said, I'm surprised you picked that up.
Well, I thought it said like smash on it. I was like, oh, I like smashing things.
Pete Smash.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very funny to me. I guarantee you this store had like an IPA and a Pilsner and whatever, and you ended up with the most non-Pete stuff
Light.
Possible.
Yeah. That's what I was looking for, but you know, I had this whole like wall of all these crazy looking beers, and I was just like staring at it for like 10 minutes, and this guy was like, "Sir, do you need help?" And I was like, "Get away from me."
You panic, just ran your arm down the shelf and grabbed whatever was
Yeah, exactly.
I should say that I'm in upstate New York, so I am crushing Labatt Blues, the official beer of
excellent.
The top part of New York State, and it is just what you need.
Yeah, man.
I got
special
today. There we go. 6 Point Brewery Pineapple Resin Hazy Deepa with pineapple. It's a limited release.
Were you scraping resin over there, bro?
Yeah, there you go. It's real good. Very good. Stray Bullet is asking me. So before the show, I went to the beer distributor and found this place that had Skittles beer. Skittlebrow, if you know the Simpsons reference, as well as a Fluffernutter beer. And I was like, ha, I'm not going to buy this. And then I bought it because I have no impulse control. But I also haven't had a drink for 2 weeks because of COVID. This is the first drink I had. And I was like, I don't want my first drink in 2 weeks to be Skittles beer.
Yeah, just ease into it with a double IPA with pineapple flavoring.
Yeah, exactly.
What a health nut we got on our hands.
You're killing it, Sobs.
It wasn't about health. Logical. It was about something that I know that I was actually going to like rather than something gross that I was going to torture myself with for comedy on this show.
You're going to slip into the cozy chair of a pineapple IPA?
Yeah.
You're a god, man.
I don't want to drink a Skittles beer. I'll drink this pineapple IPA. That's so much smarter.
It is. It's delicious. Highly
I will say, Pete, you can't yell at Alec from the soapbox of Peach Rhubarb Smash. just be cool. Be careful, dog. You're a little out over your skis.
All right. We got a bunch of questions that are piling up. So why don't we get into them? Let's see. We got one here on Crowdcast. This is from Edward Darty. I'm driving between Sydney and Canberra with my 8-year-old nephew, and we are listening in the car. He wants to know if you have heard of a comic strip called Foot Rot Flats. If not, if you were to write a newspaper comic strip about your pets, what would they do in it?
Wow.
Well, in my case, my dog would bark during podcasts.
I'm not going to stand for you talking bad about Pip, because Pip don't fucking slip, all right? It's one of the greatest dogs.
Remember, an 8-year-old is listening to this podcast, but go off.
Hey, life is hard, 8-year-old. I wish you well with it.
Foot Rot Flats, I have not heard of, but I like that style. And I once drove from Sydney to Canberra and had a lovely drive.
Aww.
Pete, what about you? Pet comic book strip?
Well, the comic strip that I drew when I was a kid, every once in a while did feature my dog, who was my sidekick and could also fly.
Very nice. I don't have any pets currently, but if I was to do a comic strip about a pet, it would probably be my turtle, Jeremy, from when I was a kid, who hated me and used to bite me every chance that he would get.
I love that turtle.
Jeremy Spokane.
That makes me so happy.
I gave Jeremy away to the local science museum, and he only got larger.
I bet.
Oh. Wait, you gave him away because he hated you?
No, because I was going away to college. My parents didn't want to take care of him. So, you know, turtles grow as large as their container.
Right.
So I kept him in an aquarium, and he was like, I don't know, I'm trying to think how to describe this for audio podcast, like a face-sized turtle.
An Altoid case.
Yes. Maybe a little larger than that. But by the time I got back to the science museum a year later, he was, I don't know, half the size of me or something like that.
Because he's been working out, planning his vengeance.
Yeah, he got
I see you, buddy. coming yeah, for you. Like, you watch yourself.
Fucking, I'm gonna get you, Zelda.
All right, Dad. I grew up, and you're in trouble.
Yeah,
you just Alex. You didn't want to be one of the cool freshmen who brought their turtle with them freshman year, dude.
I did miss out on turtle days at Cornell. Pete knows what I'm talking about. Ithaca College students weren't allowed.
Wow.
Yeah.
The fight continues. Oh,
dang, we missed out on turtle days. But yeah. I tell you what, it's fucked up that you did that to your turtle after you just
We do have a question here. This is from Sherlock on YouTube. I don't know if he hopped over here despite asking him to. He says, can I take the secret Punisher quiz even though I do not have a Crowdcast account?
Oh, wow. Man. Well, Stray Bullies is in the process of taking the...
I think it's open to anyone.
Somebody else can jump in, but the question is, do you want to do it with somebody on YouTube?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a delay, but, you know.
That's right. We can just why don't we fill it with another quiz?
Yeah, there we go. Or another question.
Is there another quiz?
How about this? So, Sherlock, here we go. I'm going to tell, hey, Sherlock, you're on for the Punisher quiz.
Nice. This is really behind the curtain. You get to hear Alex typing.
Comments. I'm doing this for the... Nice,
but he gives us the typing monologue.
I'm doing this for the audio podcast, guys. Yep. I don't know if you remember, we do an audio podcast as well. Yeah. But Pete, why don't you ask a question in the Punisher quiz? Sherlock will answer in the YouTube comments. In the meantime, we'll answer another question.
Well, here's the problem. Like, Stray Bullet made it through a certain number of questions. And then Alex failed.
If you don't remember one of the major components of the Punisher quiz, you have to repeat the same question.
No, just go forward. Just ask the next question, Pete.
Well, that's the thing. Should this new person have to start at the beginning?
No,
of the
I'm saying
quiz?
Very specifically, or don't. Start don't off do that. Where... Just start at the next. Ask the next question. Because despite what we said earlier, I don't think anybody likes to listen to us not say anything.
Do you think when they were workshopping Wheel of Fortune, it was sort of like this? They were just like,
probably.
Exactly.
No, no, no. Ask one question. Put a puzzle up and then spin the wheel.
Vanna was like, how much silence do you want on the show? A couple of minutes of silence?
Because like Vanna doesn't talk. She's like, I'll handle the silence.
Yeah, she's good. Ask a question, Pete. Next question in the Punisher quiz.
All right. I'm trying to remember where we left off here.
Just wing it back. Jesus Christ.
I think it was. Okay, yeah, I think it's. We'll start with number five.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Question number five. Who wrote The Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe? Is it A, Stephen Grant, B, Garth Ennis, or C, Chuck Dixon?
Nice.
All right, Sherlock, answer that question. In the meantime, we're going to go over here to another question on Crowdcast.
Don't Google that, though, because don't do that.
Yeah.
Pablo D. Martinez says, do you like your comic signed on the cover or not?
Ooh.
Well, it depends on...
I think so. Covered up.
It depends on what's happening, because it's like, you know, some covers, you know, you might ruin it. It's a beautiful cover, so you could get them signed on a different page where the signature, you know, doesn't take away from the art.
Mm-hmm. I like to have them sign a bad comic that they didn't write, just to be like, that way they don't ruin it.
Like as a test?
Yeah. They just keep them together.
I think the cover, I wouldn't want it on another page, because then I wouldn't know it was signed. I do understand the impulse to not like ruin the comic book by drawing on it, but if you're going to get it signed to the cover.
Signed comic is added value. It's like putting a patio on your house.
Yep. Sherlock says B. Is the answer B?
That is correct.
All right. Good job, Sherlock. Let's get the next question in the Punisher quiz.
Okay. Question number six. What Punisher title did Chuck Dixon write in 1993? The Punisher Back to School Special, B, Marvel Knights, or is it C, The Punisher, A Man Named Frank?
All right. While Sherlock is coming up with the answer for that, Nelson Martinez over on YouTube says, there have been a lot of great comics turned into live-action TV shows like Umbrella Academy and Lock and Key. What's a show you'd like turned into a comic? What's a show you'd like turned into a comic? I'd like to see a Suicide Squad comic myself. I feel like this is a joke question.
Yeah.
But, because of that last bit?
Yes. But we've talked about this before, but plenty of new shows have come out. What show would you like to see turned into a comic? I'll throw one out that did have a very short comic book story, but I think would be perfect for a comic book continuation, is Raised by Wolves, which was recently canceled at HBO Max. Creator of the show did a short comic story that is awesome for DC, but if they don't actually end up getting picked up by another place, which I kind of suspect they won't, do more on comic books.
Yeah. I mean, I would throw out a show I'm watching and really enjoying right now, The Old Man. It's some of that, because it's got the right amount of action that you could make a fun comic out of it, and a lot going on.
I would like to Street Fighter 2, the animated comic, is what I would like to see.
I think that exists, Pete.
Well, great. Then they did it.
It's crazy, Pete. Then they did it.
Well, then that Marvel versus Capcom, the comic, then.
Let me throw out, Pete, you had a real opportunity here with the entire comic world listening, ready to make whatever you said came out of your mouth, and you didn't say the answer Ted Lasso. And I'm shocked because you just killed the opportunity for a Ted Lasso comic.
Don't say that. I'm sure that's in the works as we speak.
By the way, Nelson clarifies that instead of Suicide Squad, he actually meant a Squid Game comic, which makes a lot more sense and is a better idea. Sherlock says B for the next answer. Is that correct, Pete?
That is incorrect.
Ooh, so Punisher quiz stopped. That means we're going to have to do that more. All right, why don't we move on to another question here from Crowdcast. I spend too much time on Twitter arguing with Snyder fans, and it has caused me to reflect... Oh, this is from Straight Bullet, by the way. I spend too much time on Twitter arguing with Snyder fans, and it has caused me to reflect a little. Has gatekeeping gone too far? Are we too stuck worrying about continuity and what others will do with our favorite characters in various media? Also, I want to take the Punisher quiz. Great. So I'm going to invite Stray Bullet in, and while we're waiting for him to come in,
do you have a deadline on get this Punisher quiz out the door?
I want to get through this one so that we can get to my Cypher quiz.
Oh, right. Smart. Smart.
That's very funny. Because I love you're like, okay, do the Punisher quiz. We're going to answer some questions in between your questions. It's bap, bap, bap. Let's mow this down. It's like a parent being like, okay, it's bedtime. Finish your book and then brush your teeth. We're going to get through this.
That's how I do bedtime, baby. What do you think? Has gatekeeping gone too far? Oh, here's Straight Bullet. Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey.
Are you ready to do the Punisher quiz?
Yeah, sure. I guess.
All right.
I don't know. Speaking of Punisher,
dude. Yes.
Black Lives Matter shirt. Agreed.
That's the Jerry Ordway, one of his... he got mad that the cops and the
I did the same thing. I got a shirt too to support it. It was a great idea, great cause. All right, Stray Bullies.
Three.
You know, I was thinking about this before of like getting angry at somebody like and yelling into the void does eat up a lot of my time and energy. And it's kind of like this thing of like, what am I doing? I don't know this person. I don't really respect this person. Whereas I found like if we're on a Patreon Slack, when I'm talking to you or somebody else that I kind of know from, you know, just being around over the years, it's a little bit more of a dialogue, a little bit more of a back and forth where you're actually listening instead of just being like, you fucking, you know what I mean? Like just so screaming into the void.
I've never really done that, but, you know, like the Snyder fans on Twitter are wild. It's insane. Like, so at some point I was like, is this really worth my energy? Like, I know that currently Batman doesn't kill. Apparently the Snyder guys will make any excuse and I'm generalizing. I realize this, but you know,
this is Zack Snyder, not Scott Snyder, who we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, no, not
no, Scott no. This Snyder. Is Schneider, the character.
Yes. Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, it was like, really, you're right. It was sucking up on my energy. I was like, should I really give a shit about this at all?
I mean, the answer is no, you shouldn't necessarily.
No, the answer is no.
Yeah, you absolutely shouldn't waste your time on it because nobody's going to change their mind about anything online. Yeah. There's no scenario where you're going to dunk on somebody online and they're going to be like, you were right. I changed my mind. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
So,
I mean, me and Jolene have also had like epic fights in.
Yeah, those
in the Slack.
But I appreciate those.
Even those are like I don't know.
I like both of your sides.
Yeah, and like Pete is saying, I think when you know the people, you can have those sort of arguments and discussions and move on from there because you know generally you respect the other person or know the other person and it's okay. But online, you don't have that because you don't know the person. So there's that. The second aspect of it is I do think it's this whole sports type thing where it's like, I'm going to win. My guy's going to win. My guy is Batfleck and Batfleck's going to win. And it's just all about like jockeying for that. And it's all about that dunking back and forth versus any actual legitimate discourse. So
yeah.
So answer is it's not worth it, but sometimes it's fun. So there is that.
Sometimes it's fun.
Wow.
Especially when Jolene posts like, what does she call it? Like ice water, wet water, whatever, wet ice.
All the water ice. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole shaved ice, water ice, water ice.
All right, listen, I'm on a deadline with this Punisher quiz, though.
Okay, so here we go. Back to question number six.
Oh, my God, Pete.
What Punisher title?
I didn't get number three.
What's that? No, I think it's okay. We're moving on. We're moving on.
Oh, we're down. Okay, so number three was Elektra.
Yeah. Okay, great. Here we go. What Punisher title did Chuck Dixon write in 1993? A, the Punisher Back to School special, B, Marvel Knights, or C, the Punisher, A Man Named Frank?
C.
Incorrect.
Wow. This question is a real stumper.
Sorry, guys. This quiz is
the Punisher quiz lives on.
Keep going. And you didn't do question five or four. You didn't do question four.
Yeah. All right.
Trey, stop. We're going forward.
Yeah, we can't go back. We can't go back. All right. Thank you for popping in. Have a good
night. Great to see you, Stray Bullies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Wait, so what's the name of this brewery again? It's Brew Carré.
Yes.
Named after the Vieux Carré, which is French Quarter.
Great
cocktail. Nice.
And
good stuff.
That's a brewery that I didn't go to last time I was in New Orleans, and I got to go.
I'm going.
I know. There was a beer waiting for you on the board, too.
I know. I fucked up. I agree.
Oh, man.
All right. Good seeing
if
you.
If I know any of you are coming, there'll be a beer waiting for you on the board.
Oh, love it. All right. Thanks, Brett. Have a good night.
Okay. Later.
All right. We got a bunch more
beer
questions
on the board.
Here. Beer on the board.
There's a beer on
we
the board.
We got a question here from Lou on YouTube. I recently rewatched all the X-Men films. What are your personal favorites? Mine is First Class.
Nice.
That's
a tough rewatch.
I mean, the only Quicksilver parts are the only things that I think are worth it. And
from the whole
I've
series?
Watched all of them.
The whole X-Men series.
Yeah, I've watched all the...
Just the Quicksilver slow-mos?
We're not even talking about the second reboot cast. We're talking about every X-Men movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to shout out the Siege of the Mansion in X2. My favorite part.
Great stuff.
Love
it. First Class, like, there's problems with it. I think very obvious problems with it, but it's the only one that actually comes close to kind of like nailing being an X-Men movie, honestly. And
yeah,
super good, super poppy, super fun for most of the running time. Everybody is great in the movie.
For me, it was the first one where, oh my God, why am I blanking on Wolverine's?
Cyclops.
No, Wolverine's nemesis, Sabretooth. The guy who played Sabretooth was unbelievable.
Tyler Mane.
No, I think it was the wrestler dude, wasn't it?
Tyler Mane.
Oh, well, anyway, Yeah.
Look, I love that. B walks away from that, not agreeing with you anyway. He's like, anyway, I don't care what you said. I don't care about anything. I'll see you later.
Great. All right. This is a question from Kevin, reigniting an oldie but a goodie. What are your favorite slice of life comics or slice of life issues in otherwise actiony comics?
Oh, otherwise actiony. Okay. Well, the best slice of life for me is Too Cool to Be Forgotten.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to call out an Alex Robinson book as well, which is Box Office Poison, which is basically like Reality Bites on the Lower East Side, and it's so good.
It's great. Both great books. Shout out that A-Rob. I guess my favorite slice of life, Head Lopper.
Heads be getting lopped. That's
I mean, depends, here's the thing. It depends on your life. You're talking about slice of life. It depends on your life. And that's my life. I live a head lopping life.
Wow, that's amazing.
Ooh, we got an old friend, I think, here in the comments over on YouTube. This is Tomer D'Odar. Hey, Tomer. What panel presentations, news are you most anticipating from San Diego Comic-Con in a few weeks?
Ooh.
Oof. I mean, this is like a big San Diego. It's like, it feels like the energy's been building for throughout all of COVID. We're back. I think there's going to be, it's going to be intense coming out.
The big one, I think, is the Marvel studio. Marvel is having a panel again, and they have not had a panel or announcement, I think, since like whatever it was, that Disney Plus day where they announced 1 kabillion things.
Well, but on top of that, like we're in an information desert, I feel like, when it comes to sort of what's happening with this phase. So I agree with you, Alex. I think that panel is going to be huge.
Yeah. And I think that's the point when everybody has been asking, like, it's been a perennial question. We've asked it on our podcast. Everybody has been talking about it. The press has been talking about it, of like, what is Marvel right now? Like, what is phase four? Where is it going? What is the next step? We don't have a Thanos. We don't have an Infinity Saga or anything like that. And I think this is the point. I don't think they're going to lay out the whole story or anything like that, but I think they're going to pull out that old timeline and be like, here it is. Phase four ends here. Young Avengers or Dark Avengers or whatever it is. Here's phase five. Here's phase six. Question marks. Daredevil is coming back. We're bringing back Jessica Jones. We're bringing back all of this stuff. And it's just going to like blow the roof off. And there's a lot of other things there. I'm very interested in Prime Video's Lord of the Rings. They're doing a bunch of huge panels, so I'm like very curious about that. But nothing's going to touch that Marvel Studios panel, I don't think.
We'll see.
We'll see. Oh, what's your call, Pete? What are you looking forward to?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just
smoking weed with Kyle Baker, the panel.
Getting baked with the baker? I think it's one of those things where I'm just excited that it's happening and we can kind of get back into the swing of things a little bit. I'm excited for other things to get going outside of Marvel and kind of give us a little bit more slice of life stuff. You know what I mean?
Wow. The Joker 2 panel, Alex?
You can't wait. It's going to be all musical. Michael Tillman asks, it's my brother's birthday on Thursday. Fellow Patreon supporter Andrew Tillman, what comic theme celebration should he partake in? And do you have any gift ideas for him?
Midtown's comic gift card online is always a good thing to get somebody. Mm-hmm. I always go with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle party pack, mm-hmm. You go down to Party City or something and get yourself a fun thing like that, you know?
Yep.
That's nice. Nice. Really nice. I think doesn't the thing turn human on his birthday?
Mm-hmm.
I think the reverse. I think, he should have the ability to become the thing for his birthday.
You can just cover him with rocks.
You say you maybe duct tape Michael. You can duct tape rocks to Andrew and just
duct tape rocks. Wait, don't, to your
when
brother.
He's sleeping, when he's sleeping,
now that
wake
goes.
Him up after you got the rocks attached, and he's gonna have a fun day.
Kevin has a reasonable suggestion here in the comments, an evening screening of Thor: Love and Thunder. I guess you could do something like that. The thing I was going to suggest is since you're bowl. Both in the Patreon Slack, hit up the food and drink portion of the Slack. Brett has been creating a bunch of like more high-end comic book-themed cocktails, which are super good, super delicious. So you could probably get a couple of suggestions there.
That's a great answer. But I
just
keep in mind
drunk with your brother.
Rocks thing, yeah.
Yeah, keep in mind the rocks. This is, we got two more here, I think. This is from Sherlock, who just did the Punisher quiz over on YouTube. What was the first comic you guys remember getting into as a kid and really enjoying?
Great question.
Well, for me, it was the first time I got to pick something from the spinner rack. And I've said this before, but it was a cover of Captain America with like two Uzis. And he was screaming and shooting some guns. And I was like, what is happening here?
This guy seems cool.
Yeah.
I've also definitely mentioned this before, but I started reading the X-Men books around Fall of the Mutants. And like, that was the middle
so
of,
much about you.
Middle of it. And I was like, oh my God, this is so dark and awesome. And I love this. And I was completely hooked. And I think, if anything, like, that was the thing that, I've told this before too, but I was running out of room for comic books and my dad was like, all right, you got to sell some. We're going to go to a comic book convention. And so I kind of had to choose between DC and Marvel. I had a whole Batman collection, a whole Superman collection, bunch of other comic books, sold all of those books, probably about like 500 comics for $90. I was like, this is the most money I've ever seen in my entire life. This is amazing. But that's
you
how
I ripped it off, right? Dude.
It's still the most money I've ever seen in my entire life. But yeah, I stuck with Marvel for years after that. And it was all because of the X-Men books.
There's nothing worse than when you have to sell your comics and then you hold on to your dreams and these amazing pieces of art. And they're like, I'll give you $90 for all of it.
But I think you're spreading it out into the world like a beautiful coronavirus. I would say... the first series, I'm going to go with the Korvac Saga, which ran through the annuals back in the mid-90s. Ran through, like, I think Silver Surfer, Fantastic Four, or a couple others. Really enjoyed that and still think about that today.
But the comic that got me hooked and going to comic book shops was Eastman and Laird's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Hmm. All right. I think we got time for one more here. This is from our good friend Pablo D. Martinez.
Hey, Pablo.
Thor Love and Thunder has opened its embargo, 69% on Rotten Tomatoes so far. Are you going to see it?
Yep,
dogs are howling. Or wait till Disney Plus in 45 days.
No, I'm not waiting. That's way too long. You can't stay away from spoilers for 45 days.
Oh, I'm seeing it. I don't care about spoilers. This movie looks fun.
It does look fun.
It does look fun.
You got your tickets? You guys got your tickets already?
No, I don't have my tickets yet. But
what do you have, Alex?
No, I have a spoiler that I'm bursting at the seams.
Oh,
so I can tell you,
people on this podcast about. I don't want to say who specifically.
Wait, you know something?
Wait, is this something we're going to enjoy? One of us is going to enjoy it?
I think one of us is going to enjoy it. I don't want to say who. Could be me.
No, I want you to say who. If you don't tell us the spoiler, tell us who's going to like it.
Okay, is it going to be a spoiler if I say who's going to like it?
Don't fucking ruin this movie.
It's not just a spoiler to say which one of us is going to like it.
Pete is going to lose his shit.
Oh, my God. That's interesting.
Oh, my God.
In a good way, you're saying. In a positive way.
Yeah, positive shit losing.
Oh, my God. I'm not ready.
You're not ready.
I'm not ready.
There
I'm
going to
be up
in
the Ra Cha Cha this weekend, so it'll be a fun movie-going experience. I'm coming for you, Justin. I'm coming up to the upstate.
You can't get this far north, brother.
Dude, let's meet halfway. Come on, man. Halfway between Rochester, where you are. Meet me at the movie theater.
All right. My dogs are howling, and the dogs are howling. So why don't we move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. It's about time I had some trivia moments. You know what I mean? Reading questions and stuff.
Ooh, we got Pablo with a hand up here. Can I just bring Pablo in?
Sure.
All right. Here we go.
Today's trivia is on topical comic
Pablo's
news.
Not in yet. You got to set it up for him. He might not know it's on topical comic book news.
I'll patiently wait.
But he's going to be playing for a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Here's Pablo, everybody. Hello, Pablo. Oh, Pablo's gone.
He was here.
Oh, well. And now he's back. There we go. All right, take it away, Pete.
All right, today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend, Bo Hopkins, R.I.P.
Okay.
Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. In Venom number 10, out in August, they asked the question, who is blank? Is it A, Bedlam, B, Jewel, or C, Peter O'Toole? So it's either A, Bedlam, or B, Jewel.
It's got to be A.
You are correct, sir. Here we go. Question number two. What artist will be joining Dan Slott on Spider-Man? Is it A, Mark Bagley, B, Sher Gladley, or C, Liv Schreiber? So it's either going to be A, which is the only one that makes sense, or you could pick something else.
There's nothing else, because A is the answer.
That is correct. Mark Bagley. Should be fun. Last one. Who will Valiant be bringing back in a mature reader series? Is it A, Joan B. Staying, B, Jonah Going, or C, Bloodshot? So it's either A, B, or you could pick C, which makes sense.
Oh, boy.
Don't overthink it, Pablo.
What are the answers again?
Say C, Bloodshot.
Okay, I'm going with C.
C.
There you go. Congratulations.
Wow. All right. Great job, Pablo. You are going to get a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. We'll send it your way. Always good seeing you.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
All right. There we go.
Pablo.
And who, well, what was the secret movie, Pete?
That's right. Kevin is right. Phantoms, yo. The 1998 hit.
Hit? All right. As we all know, comics are coming out, and that's cool. What are you looking forward to, Pete, that is out in comic book stores this week?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of great stuff that I'm looking forward to. Two of them being Poison Ivy number 2 and DC versus Vampires number 7.
There you
get
go.
Get out of here. Those are literally the two I was going to say.
Well, so I can go in the meantime, unless you
No, I got. I'm fully loaded. Batman Killing Time number 5 by Tom.
Oh, yeah. Dude, that was good.
Great read. Came together in a way that I somehow didn't see coming, but really enjoyed. Are you guys with me on that?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to save our reviews for the podcast, but sure, man.
I'm going to shout out also That Texas Blood number 15. One of my favorite books. Nice I always shout God, out.
Jesus, you're a broken record.
I'm going to give a shout out to Mind Management Bootleg number 1 from Dark Horse Comics. Loved Mind Management. Very curious to see how and why it comes back. And in particular, this has not just Matt Kent writing, but also Farrell Dalrymple art, which is... always.
Alex, you shouldn't buy bootlegs of comics. You should buy the real thing. You know what I mean? That's not, you're not supporting the artist.
No, when it's cold out, I put boots on my legs, and that's always a good thing. So I have to assume bootlegs are a good thing.
That's wow, true. Alex has full legging boots that go all the way up to his, right up to the crotch.
If you're not Uggin, you're Buggin, I always say.
Oh my God.
Do you have full length Uggs? Wow. Curious you where you're it. Going in those.
Anyway, all of those are going to be in our Stack podcast that rolls out Wednesday, 9 a.m. in the Stack feed, as well as the Comic Book Club feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show.
Oh, man, that's it?
A couple of people we want to thank for coming on. We want to thank Caro Howell for coming on, the director of the Thalmann Museum. You can check out that exhibit, Superheroes, Orphans, and Origins, until August 28th if you're in London or heading that way. Joshua Campbell, don't forget to check out Jacob's Apartment. Out and out from Graphic Monday. Also, C.K. Lawson and Aubrey Lynn Jepsen. Scott Snyder presents Tales from the Cloakroom is now on Kickstarter. Bunch of other things to plug. Next week, another PAX show with Matthew Arnold talking about Eden, Jason Starr talking about The Next Time I Die, and our good friend Sean Lewis is going to be back to talk about Above Snakes, his new book, which I'm very excited to chat about. Let's Hear It for the Boys, our boys podcast, coming out on Fridays. One more episode to go. Going to be a big one. Riverdale After Dark or Riverdale podcast, usually coming out on Mondays at this point after the Sunday episodes. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, talking about Miss Marvel. Going to be news episodes this week on Wednesday. The Doom Room, our Doom Patrol podcast, coming out on Thursdays, where you can get every episode now at patreon.com/comicbookclub, which is a great way of supporting this podcast and all the podcasts we do. Subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Thanks, everybody. Take care of yourself.